You're listening to The Andy Finn Show, centrally located in America, on the TAFS Radio Network.
The Andy Finn Show is back, and I'm here with Concetta Stewart. Concetta is the Dean of the College of Communication at Temple University, formerly a manager at AT&T in a previous career. And so Concetta knows something about leadership. And today, I want to talk, Concetta, about leadership, particularly taking off from some things that were in a recent issue of Newsweek, the October 24th issue of Newsweek, had a special report on how women lead. And of course, I thought I'd see you on the cover, but it was Oprah. But they had a couple of lengthy articles about this, but then they had 12 leaders on life lessons. And I thought this was interesting. A number of things struck me about this. So I want to talk to you about that, but I didn't even give you a chance to say hello. So welcome to the show.
Hi, Andy. How you doing?
I appreciate you being here. I'm doing fine. Let's start with the first lesson. So a woman by the name of Allison Estabrook, who's the director of the Comprehensive Breast Center at St. Luke's Roosevelt Hospital, listed her main life lesson that she wanted to impart to people. And by the way, I should say that while we're talking here about women and women's leadership styles and contrasting them to men, I think these are general lessons in life for the most part.
I would agree.
And so the first one is have self-confidence and know what you want and where you're going. That's my paraphrase of it. So what is your take on that as a general lesson to women, but to leaders, people that want to be leaders in general?
Well, in general, folks want to be led by individuals that they believe have a command of the situation, are able to be decisive, and are comfortable at the helm. And self-confidence is critical to that. And the fact of someone being indecisive is disarming for folks. They feel that perhaps this is a weakness in leadership, a weakness in the institution. So it's really very critical that one is decisive. Now, it doesn't mean you can't change your mind, but it is really critical to be clear about what you want to do, what your plans are to get there, and how you will affect it.
That's one of the things people seem to like about our current president, George W. Bush, eh? He's quite decisive.
That actually is one of his most popular elements among men and women alike.
But as you point out, you need to be willing to change your mind. And while recently he has reversed himself a few times in general, you do run the risk of appearing stubborn if you don't if you aren't willing to roll with the punches sometimes, or go with the flow, or what's the expression? Take the river in the direction it's flowing.
You know, I think people see a leader's ability to change his or her mind as a sign of maturity, that one is comfortable enough with one's own ideas and abilities that you know, he or she can change his or her mind without appearing to be wishy-washy.
Well, and I think this comes down to this issue of you don't want to be a flip-flopper, as the term was popularized in the last presidential campaign. But if something's not working, it only makes sense to try something different.
Exactly. That's the idea of, you know, being out in front and keeping up with the latest information. I think people expect leaders to be able to do that as well.
Well, and also to admit mistakes, because if something isn't working and you have to shift gears and say, well, you know, we thought this would get us where we're going, it's not working, so we're gonna change.
Yeah, I've noticed that leaders who can't admit mistakes almost have this situation of like the emperor has no clothes, where they end up being the only ones not recognizing that something isn't working, and that really is a terrible situation for morale and confidence of an organization.
Well, I think we you and I have both seen that in the corporate world, and we've seen it in government and in presidential politics.
Well, I think that's going to happen anywhere where the leader has too much of their ego invested.
Well, in fact, that brings me to two other things. One of the other women in this list of advice said, in fact, that don't let your ego get in the way. And it strikes me that one of the ways I talk about this is that people have a tendency to worry about looking good. You know, we all want to put on the best face. So if I'm in front of a class as a professor, well, I have a certain way I should be as a professor. Or if a president is a president, you know, whatever level you're at, people worry that they have to look a certain way. And yet I think what people want is to see that you're a human being.
You know, I have to, I guess, agree and disagree. People want to know that you are indeed human and you have compassion and can really identify with the common man, so to speak. But I've found that more often than not, they really do ascribe superhuman behaviors to leaders and expect them to, they don't like to see them make too many mistakes. I'm not saying that you shouldn't admit your mistakes, but I do think that people expect their leaders to be really above the fray in many ways. And they also have a certain sense of what a leader should look like and how he should behave. You become an icon in many ways. So it's really a balancing act. You can't be aloof. You can't be above those that you're leading, but they expect you to be. It's really a tension that one experiences in
traditional
leadership.
And that makes sense to me, what you're saying, that you do have to put forth you have to give the appearance of, as you said, being decisive, but also being in command. I think too many leaders worry, though, that by admitting a mistake or by saying I was wrong or changing directions, that they will lose authority. And that's not necessarily true.
No, you know, it really depends on the circumstance and, of course, the frequency. You know, if you're going to make a mistake on a regular basis, that's going to decrease people's confidence in you. But on occasion, particularly when something unexpected comes up or a new piece of information, if you don't acknowledge it, well, then you're thought of as foolish.
Right, of course. That makes sense. Well, let me move on to the second piece of advice here among these 12 leaders who offered life lessons. And the second woman was Judith Jameson. She's the artistic director for the Alvin Ailey American Dance Theater. And to summarize her advice, and again, these are my summaries, not necessarily exactly what the women said, she basically said, surround yourself with people who you respect and who know more than you know.
You know, that I always say that I hire people who can do my job. I call it a succession plan. But in reality, when you think about the breadth of a portfolio any particular leader has, it would be really unreasonable to expect that person to have the depth of knowledge in each of those areas, but they need to have access to that depth. And consequently, that merely means hiring the best possible person who can, in some ways, run circles around perhaps even you, but certainly most people in the field. I think that the challenge to the leader then is to know how to manage that talent, how to use that talent, and how to extract the information they need when they need it in a useful way. And that means that the leader has to be well-informed and able to articulate priorities and issues and questions in ways that take advantage of that person's skills.
Isn't there also a matching capability here that's needed on the part of the leader, some good instincts to put the right person in the right job? That is, in some cases, you are dealt the cards you're dealt. That is, you move into a group and you inherit a team of people working for you, whatever level of management you're at. And you can say, well, so-and-so's useless, but you really need to figure out what they're good at. And if they've been in the wrong job, move them to a job where they can now be successful.
Right, because I think we need to move away from the notion of an organization consisting of jobs or job descriptions, if you will. I think that that's really an antiquated view. What we really need to think of is what are the outcomes that the organization is moving toward, And how can the, as you said, the cards you're dealt with at the time, the players you have on your team at the time, help you achieve those goals? I found some of the most talented people I've ever worked with were people who I hired to do one thing and ended up discovering a wonderful talent in them that they themselves didn't realize, and watching them develop and really serve the organization, and then by extension certainly serve me very well, achieving my goals.
And I would argue that is one of your strengths as a leader, and I think a number of good leaders probably have this, but I've known you quite some time, Conchetta, and you have an uncanny ability to recognize people's skills and to put them in a job where they'll succeed.
Well, I appreciate your saying that, but I have to say on a selfish level, I'd like to be successful. I like to achieve my objectives and to do it well. But I also enjoy optimizing people's abilities. It's really a delight to see somebody advance in a career or in a particular skill set that makes them more valuable down the road. And I take a lot of personal satisfaction in that.
I think that's a trait of all leaders, all good leaders. That is that they see their job to make their people succeed. But do you think that it's more likely that, do you think women are better at that than men?
I don't know. I would like to say that, but I have to say I learned a lot of my management skills as a young woman working for both men and women, and some of the most compelling things I learned as a manager and a leader were from both men and women, and I take those things with me to this day.
And, of course, you've seen women in management that aren't as sensitive to those things as some men, I'm sure.
Yeah, you know, I have to agree with you. I've seen some clunkers on both sides.
Right. It's not a gender thing per se. Well, there is quite a bit of... Go ahead.
I did want to circle back, though, to the not to sound too Pollyanna or too noble here. I really think when you develop skills in somebody that they didn't know they had and they may move on, I'm not so naive to think that down the road that person won't be useful to me. And they may never work for me again, but you just... The other thing that I think is so important is to build networks of support beyond your immediate organization. And that's what I think makes you a strong leader.
Well, as you say this, I'm reminded of what they call in inside the Beltway here, DeLay Incorporated. Tom DeLay has seeded any number of lobbying organizations and any number of House of Representatives and Senate staffs with people who have worked for him over the last 20 years. And so he has all these friends, former staffers, that used to work for him that are now spread all over Washington. And part of his power, it's argued, comes from the fact that all these folks cut their teeth in his shop.
Well, there's certainly something to that, although I'm hoping not to be indicted down the road for this behavior.
Ooh, on that note, we are going to come back after this.